This is the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our reliance upon plastics for everything from food wrappers to construction comes with a price. Plastic does not break down easily, so the idea of throwing it away is a bit off the mark. In recent years, we've learned more about microplastics, tiny plastic particles that collect on land, on sea, in the air, in living creatures, even in drinking water. California is moving forward on a program to monitor microplastics in drinking water to keep an eye on its health effects. Let's learn more about the path ahead. Scott Coffin is a research scientist at the California State Water Resources Control Board and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So we've all come to know the term, but how long has science known about microplastics?
The first discovery of microplastics was actually as far back as 1969.
Wow.
There was a scientist looking at different animals in the Sargassum Sea, which is the Gulf of Mexico down near Texas. And he found these really small spherical particles that were all clear, and they all looked exactly the same. They didn't look like anything in nature, and he determined that they were polystyrene, and later coined the term microplastics. And this was his concern, was that animals, aquatic animals, could eat the plastic, and it could actually transfer contaminants or harmful chemicals to these animals.
Well, that certainly explains why polystyrene is one of the first things we sought to regulate in the plastic realm. But what are the other sources of microplastics?
We think that the major source of microplastics is actually our clothing. Microfibers is a subclass of microplastics that sheds from synthetic clothing that during wear, and most of it comes off during our washing.
Okay, so it ends up leaving our washing machines and heading into the wherever our washing machine water goes, into the sewage system and so forth.
Exactly. So once the microfibers reach a wastewater treatment plant, the wastewater treatment plant removes most of the microfibers, between 85 and about 99%. And those microfibers go into biosolids, or they may be of land applied to agriculture, at which point they can make their way back into our environment through the air and through rain and potentially through food. We're not sure about that, though. But the small percentage that makes it through the treatment processes is usually exported into waterways, into rivers and into the ocean. And although it's a small percentage, it turns out to be millions or even billions of particles per year per treatment plant.
All right, so that explains how they get into drinking water. They're just there in typical water sources. Do they seem to be, and granted, we're really early in the monitoring here, but are they likely to be in urban systems or rural wells? Is one or the other more likely to have microplastics in drinking water?
We typically find higher concentrations in urban samples and near agricultural facility or near agricultural fields, that specifically the ones that use biosolids from wastewater treatment plants. Again, we think that the microfibers is the biggest source. And when it comes to groundwater, like private wells, we don't think it's possible to find microfibers. We haven't found them or any microplastics in groundwater yet.
Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. The biosolids essentially being used as fertilizer. Is that the use there from in agricultural applications?
Exactly. So a lot of the organic matter in our waste stream can be reused. It's got a lot of nutrients, and previously we haven't really considered other contaminants in the biosolids, specifically ones that could be persistent, like microplastics. So this is really a new discovery.
In terms of trying to control them, I mean, are they too micro to get captured by filters in a lot of cases?
It really depends on the size. For clothing, we know that most microfibers can be removed from a commercial filter down to about 5 or 10 microns, something that you can buy rather inexpensively online and install on your existing washing machine. But there's still the issue of the nano-sized particles, very, very small particles that will escape virtually all types of filters.
So what do we know about microplastics in the human body? I mean, do they stay in the human body or do they just get, you know, sent out? And if they stay, what kinds of effects when they're there?
So we have quite limited information about what microplastics actually do in the human body. What we do know is that they have been found in human placenta, which suggests that they're not just going away, that some percentage of them are making their way throughout our body and staying there for some period of time. Although we do believe that the majority of these particles, the vast majority, are rapidly excreted, so they're not really sticking around. Once they're in the body, we have less information about what actually occurs. We do know that they can cause cancer through lung exposure over very long periods of time. There was one study looking at workers at a Rhode Island nylon flock facility where they were breathing massive quantities of these small nylon particles all day, and they had a threefold increase in lung cancer relative to their non-worker cohort, and it was directly linked to microplastic inhalation.
Okay, but most of us aren't going to be exposed to nylon particles floating in the air, so that's not the concern, I would think, for most of us.
Well, we actually believe that inhalation is the major exposure route for non-occupational workers. So you and I are breathing quite a few particles just in our own homes. Indoor air is likely the largest source of exposure, but we don't really know what is in our food yet. We have a pretty good idea about our drinking water and air at this point.
Well, we are talking to Scott Coffin, who is a research scientist at the California State Water Resources Control Board, about microplastics in drinking water, which the state of California is making further moves to monitor, with further moves coming this year. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your questions, your comments, your thoughts about microplastics in our environment at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, Scott, I know there has been some legislation already on limiting some uses of microplastics. Is that pretty much restricted to microbeads at this point?
At this point, it really is. There's a bill, a couple bills that have banned the entry of pre-production pellets, or nurdles as they're called, basically into waterways. And that has had an impact on the nurdles that we find. We don't typically find nurdles in the environment now, which is good. It showed that bill actually had a big effect on the environmental currents, but we have yet to take a chunk out of the massive amount of microfibers and other just single-use product breakdown products that we find in the environment.
Well, the single-use product, and it tends to make me think in terms of things like those bags at the grocery stores that a lot of jurisdictions have eliminated now, or at least had before the pandemic. So there are sources of microplastics other than clothing, but clothing's still the primary one?
We're learning more and more that microfibers dominate the sphere, the world of plastic particles out there. And so we really are honing in on this clothing issue, which is not not an easy one to solve. If we do install filters on laundry facilities, that might be the best bang for our buck, so to speak. But we really need to think about how we use our clothing and potentially redesigning so that our clothing sheds less in the first place.
Well, is there any shedding with natural clothing? I mean, if you're wearing cotton or wool or something, does that tend to exude some microfibers as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, we often find cotton and wool in environmental samples, and those particles can be harmful to aquatic organisms. However, they don't stick around nearly as long as the synthetic particles, and so that's the major difference.
All right, they will biodegrade. They'll go away at some point.
Exactly.
All right. So the state of California, on this path to monitor, talk about the legislation from 2018 and what it sets up to do.
So Senate Bill 1422 was passed in 2018 in response to the first finding of microplastics in tap water. And the bill requires the State Water Resources Control Board to first define microplastics by 2020, July. And once we have a definition, then we're required to adopt a standardized method to monitor for microplastics in tap water, as well as considering a health-based guidance level. So when we look for microplastics in tap water, we have a good answer about what that means for consumers, for health. And also, we may have an understanding of how much might be too much, where we might want to take additional actions regarding public health. We're also required to adopt a 4-year sampling and analysis plan starting this July. and provide accreditation for laboratories so that we are able to compare apples to apples with our samples.
Is any other state, is California out in front of this? Is any other state doing similar work?
There are certainly some other states looking at microplastics in the environment, mostly focused on aquatic organisms and risk to animals. However, it seems that California is the first state and possibly the first jurisdiction in the world actually to take such dramatic action on microplastics in drinking water.
And so a part of this, as you mentioned, developing standards to figure out if there are actionable levels. I mean, is science even clear on what levels might be of concern?
That is a billion dollar question. Right now, we have a group of experts from around the world who are thinking about this in a workshop that we're convening. It's an ongoing effort right now that started back in October. And we're hoping to get the best answer that science can provide, but it really is a very difficult knot to untangle to figure out the health effects.
All right, so a way to travel there ahead of us for sure. Let's take a phone call here from Val in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about microplastics in drinking water with Scott Coffin from the California State Water Resources Control Board. Hi, Val.
Hi. Yeah, you may have answered that question. I have. And that is the breakdown of plastic molecules getting into DNA.
Mm-hmm. And does that happen, Scott? What do we know?
So when when very small particles of any type, it doesn't have to be plastic, it can be asbestos, for example, when they interact with cells in our body, our cells try and break them down to remove them, this foreign object from our body. And the way they do that is often by releasing what's called reactive oxygen species, which is a rather crude way of breaking down a particle. And what happens with asbestos, at least, is these reactive oxygen species, they build up in our body, and they will eventually kill the cell. And one way they do that is by altering the DNA. They'll cause mutations in the DNA because they're reactive. And that will eventually lead to cancer, which is what we have observed with the inhalation of microplastics in the case study that I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. However, we're not entirely sure if that is happening through the drinking water route of exposure.
Okay, but the airborne, for sure, there was some effect seen there.
Exactly.
Let's see, from Patricia Ann in Eureka, an email. Should we go upstream and ban the original material? Filtering is impractical, she writes.
Right. I mean, there is no away, is what we're learning. And with this filtering, you know, it's got to go somewhere. It's got to go to a landfill. It's got to go to our biosolids and potentially back into our food. So really catching it at the source is going to be the best bang for our buck. Going about that is quite challenging, of course, because we have plastic is integrated into our life and into our society.
Well, and so I need to go beyond just the plastics themselves, Scott, and ask about if there's any concern about hitchhikers they might pick up along the way. I mean, can microbes attach to microplastics, that sort of thing?
Absolutely, and that's probably one of the least researched effects of these particles. We recently discovered that plastic can be a vector for COVID-19. However, you know, whether it's actually causing any COVID infections right now, we don't think that it's likely. However, you know, it can pick up these hitchhikers. Other pathogens have been demonstrated to hitchhike on plastic over the years. And this is something that we are keeping an eye on, but we just don't have enough research to really have a good answer for yet.
So a lot of holes in our understanding, it sounds like, of microplastics and their movement, their company, and their effect upon the human body.
Absolutely.
So has the pandemic slowed the work of getting ready to implement the Senate bill?
You know, it really hasn't. We shifted. We've been quite nimble, actually, in how we are preparing for the upcoming sampling and analysis plan and determining the health effects. So we were originally planning to have a week-long meeting with our experts from around the world to convene and give us an answer about the health effects. But obviously that can't happen. So we've shifted to a several month long online format that, in my opinion, might actually be more effective. And we're currently still on track to get this done in July.
So is that when the public gets notified about what's coming, or is that anticipated for later in this year, or perhaps early next year, about the monitoring systems and all that comes with that?
So the plan to monitor will be completed in July, and it will be formally adopted. So that'll be open to the public, as well as our consideration of what the health effects are. However, we won't actually start monitoring probably until late this year or potentially early next year.
All right. So not a lot to tell the public at this point. Is there a public outreach effort laid out, or at least envisioned in some form?
There is. So currently, people around the United States, and especially in California, have something called the Consumer Confidence Report, which it tells you about your water supply. It's a mandatory report that anyone can obtain that tells you what the quality of your water is. And we are already working with some larger water systems, like in LA, to develop language for outreach, so that when consumers learn about plastic in their water, they have a good idea about what that means, what we're doing about it, the research, and what they might do, what they might want to do, either to protect their health or to reduce their impact of microplastics into the environment.
So, Scott, before we go, I've got about 30 seconds. If we figure out what the actionable level might be, are there any things within the Senate bill that as it exists now to say who takes action and how?
Yes. So we do have the ability to issue a notification level, which is it essentially requires that a water system take action on a contaminant that may mean filtering the water to remove it, or taking that water source offline, or even aggressively informing the consumers that their water may be unsafe. So that's currently at our discretion if we determine that the levels of microplastics are concerning.
Okay, more steps ahead, but as you heard from Scott Coffin, looks like the monitoring system will be ready by July 1st on time. Scott Coffin is a research scientist of the California State Water Resources Control Board. Thanks for talking to us about microplastics.
Thank you very much.